No matter if points are gained or points are lost, there will be much to discuss. For analysis regarding tonight's Winnipeg Jets game, here are Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve post-game show starts now.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media outlets, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. With Dave Manuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here to discuss the Winnipeg Jets dropping a 5-2 decision at the hands of their Central Division rival, the Nashville Predators. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Thursday evening. Hope all is well with both of you fine sirs.
I think all is well. I don't necessarily know that that's the case for the Jets after that loss, but I mean, good push in the third period, guys. Like, what were the shots at the end of the day? 18-4 or something like that?
15-4 in the third period. My God. You go. I love your glass half full optimism there, my friend. I'll tell you what.
You kind of have to be, right, Drew? Yeah, like, the first period couldn't have really gone any worse. And not only when you have 1 3-goal deficit, but 2 3-goal deficits. And obviously, guys, like the second period, Nashville was giving the Jets every reason to get back in the game. Like, they were trying to set like a world record for high sticking penalties in one period, right? Like, and we knew entering this game that the Predators were the most penalized team in the NHL, at least when it comes to minor penalties. Love that IC shirt, by the way, Drew. I should have got one for myself, but luckily our viewers and listeners can get one on the IC locker shop. But yeah, I mean, it was a terrible first period. And anytime you give up 4 goals on 14 shots or 15 shots, whatever it was, it's really tough to win a hockey game. So look, there's a reason why, you know, Nashville is where they are in the standings right now. And obviously the Jets have some games in hand, but yeah, it was a tough loss for sure. I don't really think you can sugarcoat it except for, you know, saying that the push in the third period was really good. Scheifele gets the early goal, but obviously, you know, they couldn't get any after Scheifele's goal.
Well, Dave, we know that Ezzy is he's just that kind of guy. I mean, from my perspective, and I'll let you get, I want to hear your perspective. Anything that happened after this game was either 3-0 or 4-1 is nothing but window dressing for what truly a game that was basically over after the first 20 minutes, given the Winnipeg Jets' performance in that opening stanza.
Yeah, when you go down, I think Dennis and Kevin were talking about it in the first period when Nashville scores first, how good their record is mm-hmm. in games this season. So, I mean, you knew when that first goal went in that the Jets were going to be in tough. And then, of course, quickly that was the second goal. And then there was the third goal. And you start to think to yourself, okay, well, the Jets are they're not, this isn't going to be an easy night. In fact, I'll be honest with you, at one point, I thought Mikael Burton may get his first chance to play some NHL games just because of the way it was going. And I didn't, you know, particularly like that third goal on Connor Hellebuck. So you start to wonder, you know, the overtime goal, the third goal in Washington weren't the best goals against Connor Hellebuck. And then you're starting to think, well, is he isn't having his best game. And, you know, you're going to need him against Boston and Pittsburgh conceivably. So would they give him the night off? They didn't. They let him fight through it. And then, of course, you know, you're thinking to yourself, what kind of pushback are you going to see from the Winnipeg Jets in the second period after they had a rather stinky first? And of course, you didn't, because they weren't really able to take advantage. Of course, they did. But, you know, Nashville ended up evening it out. And then, of course, third period, like you said, Drew, it's too little too late. I mean, you like the push, but I think you said it on Twitter, somebody else said it on Twitter, where is that in periods one and periods two? Because you knew how that, look, Nashville hasn't been playing well of late, right?
Yeah, no, they're coming, struggling.
They're coming in and they're sliding, and but at the same time, they're well ahead of the Winnipeg Jets right now in the standings. So this was an opportunity for the Jets. Like you said, obviously they've got games in hand, but this is at the end of the day, a chance to close that standings gap a little bit. And you didn't. Instead, all you did was lose. It's a 4-point swing because you're staying where you were at 40 points, and Nashville's at what now? 53?
With tonight's victory.
Yeah, 53, Dave.
Yeah, so you've got a 13-point deficit right now. And like mm-hmm. I said, games in hand. But that's not good, right? Because it's, you know, you've got a Nashville team that wasn't feeling good about their game. They feel good about their game now. And they kind of dummied the Jets a lot, right? They were big. They were physical. They take penalties, but they kind of feel like, okay, well, we're going to be able to kill it. And it's worth it because we're just intimidating other teams. And yeah. I saw a comment from someone on Twitter during the game, and they said, well, they're kind of playing the way the Jets from 2017-18 used to play, where they were big, physical, and teams were, you know, looking over their shoulder when the Jets were coming into the corner. Jets aren't like that anymore. Jets haven't been like that for a few years, despite the fact that people kept referencing that Jet team as if it was still relevant. People were like, oh, they're big and physical and heavy. And
I'm that like, was some, hey. Yeah.
In the, I was I like, remember. Last year, I remember. And I'd be like, who are they yeah. talking about? So we saw that from Nashville, and Nashville was playing with that element. So
there was a hit, Mark Borowiecki on Austin Pagansky. I thought Pagansky was really good again tonight, but I don't know if you guys remember that hit. I forget if it was in the second period or the third period. It was close to the Nashville bench. And Borowiecki, we know like that's how he makes his money, right? Like he did that for years with Ottawa. And then he went after Pagansky again. Pagansky's not a small guy. I mean, he's not Logan Stanley, but he's a big boy as well. So, I mean, yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, you look at Tanner Janot, who gets the empty netter. Like, this is a guy that I still don't think a lot of people know about. Like, he leads all rookies in goals.
Yeah.
And I realize that there's some other rookies that are having good years, right? Like, you look at a guy like Trevor Zegras in Anaheim, or, you know, Lucas Raymond, who we just saw, you know, Moritz Seider. Two guys on Detroit are having pretty good rookie years, right? So Tanner Janot has been a guy that's kind of been like found money, right? Like we know that, you know, he's a guy that worked his way through the minors. Like this isn't a first round pick, right? And speaking of first round picks, like Ellie Tolvanen, a guy that, you know, back 2017, Dave, draft in Chicago, right? Like we thought he might be an option for the Jets at, where did they get Vesalainen, in 23rd or something like that? I forget. It's been a while. But Tolvanen, obviously, he's continuing to play well. But you're right, Dave. I mean, this Predators team, it's not like they were entering this game, you know, red hot. And, you know, but they showed us kind of why in that first period. Like they basically did all of their damage in the first period. Like I realize Cunnan, you know, restores the 3-goal lead. But UC Saros, guys, like, again, we have to talk about him. Hellebuck maybe, you know, didn't have his best game, especially on the third goal. But, you know, Saros entered the game, I know, with a .923 save percentage. He's right up there with Hellebuck. I think they're 8th and 9th in goals saved above expectation. So, you know, that goal saved above expected, I should say. That's a stat that we always like to refer as a fancy stat, right? So, I mean, Saros is in the Vezina conversation right now, I think. So, I mean, you have to give him credit. You know, he faced a lot of rubber tonight with whatever, 38 or 39 shots. So I just think, you know, this is one of those games where you're on the road, you are desperate, you know, to gain some points on a team that's way ahead of you right now. And that first period just really, I think it just set them back, and they were chasing the lead all game long.
Yeah. Look, you can't expect to go out on the road and give up 3 goals in the first period and be in the game. So everything else that happened after that, all the push in the third period, everything else, you know, the opportunity, if you really wanted to get back into this game, came in the second period, where the Predators took penalty after penalty after penalty after penalty. And yes, the Jets did get the 5-on-3 goal to make it 3-1, and they had some opportunities to even cut it into 3-2, but they never got within more than, you know, 2 goals of the Nashville Predators this entire game. So no matter what, from my perspective, and I respect everyone else's opinions, no matter what else happened in this game, the root of it all, the core of it, is the first 20 minutes of the game where the Jets basically no-showed, where they, a divisional game on the road against the team that you're chasing in the standings, and you're not ready to go at puck drop for whatever reason. I don't know if it's a hangover effect of not having Nikolai Ehlers in your lineup. I don't know if it's just a function of a late night out on Broadway in Nashville last night. I don't believe that was the case. That's just me being tongue-in-cheek.
Especially with COVID, Drew. I don't think anybody's hitting the Tootsies?
Tootsies, yeah. No, I mean,
we were there a few years ago for Richie P's bachelor party.
It's true. Long before COVID was a thing that was going to
control our lives. You were dancing on the stage, Drew, if I remember correctly.
It's true. After a few bourbons. I did enjoy myself. That's true, Mr. Ginsburg. But whatever it is, there's just no, you know, that's the core of the problem. The root of the problem comes with, you don't show up for the first 20 minutes against a Nashville team that hasn't been playing well and is eager to get back on a winning track and get back to feeling better about themselves. And the Jets did everything in their power to let them. Now, you know, it starts with, you know, Ellie Tolvanen. You mentioned him. He gets the opening goal for the Nashville Predators, and that's early in the game, and that's at the 4:43 mark. It's his sixth of the year. Now, Tolvanen's a fourth-line guy right now for the Predators. He's not playing up in the lineup. He's not the panacea for that a lot of people thought Tolvanen was going to be when it came to some of the Predators and their goal-scoring woes a few years back. But he gets the goal. It's reviewed for the high stick. It's determined his stick is not above his shoulders and the goal should count.
Does it get any closer than that, by the way, Drew? Like, no. That was really close. I thought Craig Button did a great job explaining that it's not the crossbar. A lot of people think that that's what, you know, the review was looking at. It's actually shoulders.
Well, it's crossbar if it had gone immediately into the net, but because it was the deflection,
right,
because it deflected off the goalpost and then came back to Tolvanen, it changed what the officials were reviewing.
That's right.
Yeah. And
well, you know, Drew is auditioning for scouting the refs there.
That's true. You know what?
Drew's a former commissioner of the Jewish Students Association Floor Hockey League.
And I used to be a ref as well. If you want to really go back in the day, I was a minor hockey league ref when I was in my formative years.
Wasn't I commissioner with you, by the way, of that league?
That doesn't sound like something we would have done together.
Maybe the year after. I don't remember.
I don't know. That doesn't sound like... I don't know about you. I was embezzling money left, right, and center. I'm not sure about you. But hopefully, in your case, you were as well. But anyways, that's...
You've got 100 floor hockey sticks at home.
We digress, as we usually do here on the Illegal Curve post-game show. I guess my question for you guys, did you like the challenge by Dave Lowry there? Did you think that it was worth it?
Did Matt Prefontaine make that challenge from a hotel room in Colorado, by the way?
I think he's out of protocol. Okay. I'm pretty sure that Matt Prefontaine is
just
back.
Giving Matt a hard
didn't
time.
Didn't we lock him in a dumpster? I got out.
That being another old school reference, like last, like on the, I got that old school reference, Dave.
Okay, good.
Jeez. Your new school group.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, what are your thoughts on the initial Tolvanen goal and the initial challenge and everything else along those lines that started this game?
Yeah, are you not challenging that all day long, Dave? Like, it was so close. I think that was the right call to challenge that goal.
Yeah, I don't have a real problem with it because of how well Nashville has done. Well, you know, in like I said, when they score first, so you really don't want to give them that momentum. And your team, without Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, you're a little bit – I know you got Paul Stastny back and Evgeny Svechnikov back, but those two don't equal Nikolaj Ehlers. So I think there is an element of – I think it's worth the risk because I think it was a close call. Like, I watched that. I was inclined to think it wouldn't be overturned simply because it was called a goal on the ice and because it was fairly close. But I mean, you know, a lot of times these guys will hold this in their back pocket, and at least they made an effort and they felt that they were comfortable with their PK the way it's been to be able to kill it off. So,
and they did.
And they did, yeah. So yeah. I mean, obviously, it would have been really bad if they had it, but yeah. but I would suggest that no, I don't have a problem with the call because you know you have to take a risk sometimes. And they thought it was close, and you don't. It's not like you have, you know, 2 hours to review this and to look it over and see it from 16 different angles like we would have after the goal was called. You know, they have to look at it. Prefontaine has to watch it like very quickly, get into the ear of the assistant coach, and tell them whether they think it's worth challenging. So I mean, it's so quick and it was so close. So I didn't expect it to be overturned, but I don't have a problem with the challenge.
You know, and even before the Tolvanen goal, and I think this almost set the tone a little bit for the first period. There's about to be a penalty coming to Tanner Janot for interference on Nate Schmidt, and he knocks Nate Schmidt down, and then Logan Stanley comes up and defends Nate Schmidt, and both him and Tanner Janot decide to drop the gloves. I did not like the official's decision to even that one up. I thought, you know, what Stanley coming in to defend his teammate there is pretty standard in this day and age. And it's not like he mugged Janot or was excessive in his interaction with Janot before the fight started. I really wasn't 100% sure what warranted the even up call there after Janot and Stanley decided to fight. And Tanner Janot, to your point, as he's not a small fry. He's a big boy, and he can handle himself even against somebody the size of Logan Stanley.
He's a really good player. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, a few minutes ago about Ellie Tolvanen, and I agree with you. I think, you know, he was, again, going back to that 2017 draft, because we used to go every year. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to go since 2017. Obviously, there haven't been in-person drafts the last couple of years. But, I mean, he's a guy that a lot of people thought would be kind of in that mid-range of the first round. So the Predators kind of thought they had a steal. So you're thinking, okay, this guy's like a future 20, 25 goal scorer. And he might get there one day. He's only 22 years old, right? But I agree. Like, I think when you look at this Predators team, the biggest difference has been, I think, you know, starting off with Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg. Like, those guys are on pace for career years. They showed that graphic during the broadcast. Like, these guys are on pace for 75 to 80 points. And that has been the criticism, right, about this team. It's like, are Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene the guys that get paid the big bucks? Like, and there was talk of Forsberg being traded, right? You remember last year, guys? So, obviously, he's not going anywhere. We remember who he was traded for originally, Marty Erat, right? So, obviously, that trade is still working out for Nashville. But this is a really talented team. And I still think that they're a ways away from being a Stanley Cup contender. I still think that Colorado is by far the best team in the division, and they have games in hand, right? But yeah, like, when you look at this game kind of as a whole, Drew, it's going to be hard to erase the memory of that first period and the three goals that were scored. As we talked about, the third goal just goes through Hellebuck's legs. Like, yeah, there's no way to really sugarcoat that goal. And obviously, we're not, you know, hanging the loss on Hellebuck by any means.
We're not hanging the loss on him, but it goes back to something we talked about on Tuesday's game, Dave, when the Jets were up 2-0 on Washington and Vitek Vanacek then put up the brick wall and he said, no more. And he didn't give up another goal really until the end of the game, until the last minute to play in the third period that allowed the Jets to get to overtime. And I tweeted this as I was on the Twitter duties on our Illegal Curve Twitter account tonight. I said, you know, with about 5 or 6 minutes to go in the first period, the Jets need to get this period to intermission without giving up that third goal. And then you can maybe recalibrate yourself, and maybe then you can sort of check yourself and say, okay, that first period, it was terrible, but, you know, 2-goal deficit isn't unthinkable to come back from.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Well, unfortunately, the third goal did wreck the Winnipeg Jets. Connor Hellebuck can't let that goal in. He just can't. The team in front of him is struggling, no question. They don't have their skating legs, no question. He has every right to be pissed off about how his teammate in front of him started the game, but it's incumbent on him, especially as one of the top flight goaltenders in the NHL, to not give up that third goal at that key opportunity, Dave, to allow his team to get to the dressing room, to figure things out, and then maybe they can start the second period. Like, they did start the second period pretty well, I should say. They started the second period better. They were, you know, and it's a completely different game if it's 2-0 instead of 3-0, and then the Jets get all the power play opportunities that they got, Dave.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're not wrong, Drew, obviously. And again, it's something that teams just can't afford to do. I mean, you just can't afford to. I mean, 2-0 lead is not insurmountable. Right. 3-0 really isn't, especially with the way Nashville played almost like prevent defense once they had that three goal cushion. But the reality is that, you know, 2 goals, you know, they call it the worst lead in hockey for a reason. And you know, it's not, you can kind of overcome that. Three is you're hanging your head a little bit. You're already thinking, all right, let's move on to Boston. Let's think about the Bruins. You know, Brad Marchand couldn't lift his arm. Maybe that means that we won't have to face Marchand on Saturday. So I don't know if you saw that highlight from the Bruins game.
I did.
Where the Bruins scored a goal and Marchand didn't even lift his arm because of an injury. Well, so
Garnet Hathaway. So what you're speaking about, Boston and Washington played tonight.
Yeah.
And Garnet Hathaway hit. He boarded Brad Marchand, basically.
It was Hathaway, by the way, I've got to say, is probably one of the toughest guys. He's not a huge guy, but if Jets fans will remember when he played for the Flames, he used to challenge Dustin Byfuglien. Like, the guy was crazy, but he was tough as nails.
Anyways, he hit
just Marchand. Like you, Dave.
Yeah, just like Dave M. Yeah, he hit Marchand. He boarded Marchand. I think it was towards the end of the game, later in the game, and Marchand went into the boards heavily, and I think he left the game and didn't come back. So I would suggest his status for Saturday afternoon's matinee against the Jets would be very much up in the air. And of course, the Boston Bruins are a pretty damn good hockey team, but, you know, take Brad Marchand out of the lineup and they're not as good as they would be if he was there, which isn't news to anybody that's listening to this. But it
the Bruins won the game, we should mention.
Bruins did win the game. Yeah. What we were talking about, Dave, is though that Connor Hellebuck just can't give up that third goal. Mm-hmm. You know, coming off a game in Washington where, you know, we didn't think he was anything to write home about, where he wasn't at his best, and it's rare that he would have sort of two average to below average performances in a row, but that's what you saw from the Jets goaltender in tonight's game. I mean, the fourth goal again is a bit of a fluky one. Luke Kunin, you know, it deflects, you know, off 14 different things and goes past him. You know, you can maybe give him a little pass on that one, but that third one is just a big, big old stinky whiffer that can't go in.
Yeah, I mean, on the Kunin, just going to say, Dave, sorry, I'll let you jump in. You're just going to say on the Kunin goal, though, if you remember it, I just watched the replay too. Kunin really forces the issue on Morrissey. He goes in there and lays a nice little body check on Morrissey. And then I think it was Johansson that got it back to the point. You're right. I mean, it was a little bit of a bounce, but just wanted to get that in there. Cunnin's a guy that I've always liked, and I feel like he's criminally underrated. A couple of years ago or 3 years ago, he had a 15 goal year with Minnesota. So I just wanted to get that in there. There's no doubt that the bounces were going Nashville's way, though, to your point. Well,
but, you know, I heard that during the broadcast, and, you know, and Kevin Sawyer was yammering on about the bounces and the Jets need more puck luck and everything else. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Jets got pretty puck lucky on their first goal of the game. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's almost the definition of puck luck. So I didn't quite buy that argument that was coming out of some of the broadcast commentary in tonight's game. The puck luck is not a thing. The Jets, you know, you make your own puck luck. You make your puck luck by going hard to the dirty areas, by getting traffic in front of the net. I thought the Jets were perimeter-based still too much in tonight's game. There was no solid net drive besides Pierre-Luc Dubois, who always sets up shop there. I thought everything was on the outside and exterior, and the Jets were kind of soft a little bit, and Nashville was more physical, and the Jets couldn't really match their physicality, Dave.
Well, I was going to say, so getting back to that third goal, I mean, did you see his face when he went to the bench?
Yeah.
Like, the look he made? Like, that was like, it was like he couldn't believe he beat Connor Hellebuck with that shot. Now, I will say the Jets' line change wasn't very good. They all got bunched up at the line, and they were all, you know, late getting on because there were like 300 of them trying to get off the ice, and it just, it was a sloppy change.
And Dave, also, sorry, I keep, you know, cutting you off here. I shouldn't be doing that. You're much more eloquent than I am, but I mean, Neil Pionk got tied up there, and after the goal was scored, you could see Neil Pionk put his hand up. I remember that. So I don't know if he wanted a penalty there because that was right by the Jets bench. So I just wanted to throw that in there. I think that threw everything off because it was kind of like a partial 3-on-1 there. But something happened there because I think it was Pionk and Schmidt on the ice, if I'm not mistaken. Those were the two defensemen out there. So I just wanted to throw that out there that Pionk got caught up kind of near center, or I guess in between kind of.
It was Pionk and Schmidt. You're right.
Yeah. And basically they were being held. They were being held on the, I couldn't see which Predator it was, but they were being held in anyways. But the point is that you could just see the face that it was like, and you look, the second goal obviously goes in off Pionk's leg and through Hellebuck, but the third one, so you can forgive that one a little bit because obviously it's a deflection off your defender. But like I said, that third one, when the Predators look shocked that they scored that goal, it's probably a sign that it shouldn't have gone in the net. And Hellebuck sees it and he knows he's got, he should have the angle. And I mean, it's just, it's a shocking goal on Connor Hellebuck. And it's a deflate, to Drew's point, it's a deflating goal. It's a goal that takes any chance that your team can build some momentum and kind of kills it a little bit. Yeah. And it's one thing we haven't really seen from Connor Hellebuck is that kind of that lack from his game. So yeah, there's no question in my mind. I agree with Mal Paris. Come on, Ezzy, no more interruptions.
I'll do it.
Our friends at Seagram's have supplied Dave with some booze to tip back.
I have some fireball in the basement. I can get that.
We've all got some fireball. So we could just start doing fireball shots. It would be the person who's if it's the person who gets interrupted, I'm going to be hammered in about 5 minutes. So I don't know about that, but I think we should leave it to the person who's doing the interrupting. That way they'll stop interrupting and they'll start drinking.
Good thinking there, Dave M.
Thank you.
We say good evening to everybody. You're watching the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you, talking about the Jets' 5-2 defeat at the hands of the Nashville Predators. What we ask of you, smash the like button if you haven't already done so. That always helps us with our algorithm. I don't really know what that means, but I'm told to say it on a nightly basis. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our podcast, get alerted each and every time we go live here on YouTube. Another thing you might want to do, tell some of your friends. Maybe you have some friends who are seeking out some really good post-game coverage.
A little word of mouth, Drew.
Yes, the word of mouth is very powerful. So tell them about us here on YouTube. Show them how to log on to YouTube if they're maybe not technologically adept. You know, maybe call your grandparents up and see if they want to, you know, get on the YouTube or something and check it out. So, you know, things of that nature. That's what we ask of you when we do this after each and every Winnipeg Jets game.
The Jets. Hold on, as Manuk's Antlers just said, share on your socials.
Share on your socials. Exactly. You have socials, I presume. I don't even know really
Twitter, what that means. Twitter, Facebook, Insta.
TikTok, YouTube. Maybe you have your own YouTube channel.
Weibo.
Yeah, Weibo. That's the, I'm pretty sure, what's Weibo? Isn't that the like Chinese Twitter or something, Dave?
I think Chinese Facebook.
Okay, well, there you go. Chinese.
I set up an account when I was in Weibo.
You should be talking about Wordle. Come on, robot was the word today.
Robot was the word. Did you get it, Ezzy?
I got it on the third try, but I didn't get it as good as you did.
No, I think I got mine on the third try too.
Yeah, but I think it's. I don't know.
Does anybody?
I don't know what it means. Like, do you get ranked or anything like that? I don't understand what the numbers mean.
It's a mindless thing to do. I don't know. It's something I do while I'm eating breakfast. That's exactly that's the amount of time I spend dedicated to it. Dave, you could do it too. You know,
no, I don't do well.
Shark.
I'm not a trend follower. I don't follow the trends.
You set the trends.
Bingo.
In any event, okay, we won't talk any more about Wordle. We don't want to get people
too fired up. T-Well's mad. You said no spoiling the word. What are you doing?
Okay, we won't do it.
I don't play the game, but I mean, I would have enough respect for T-Well, who's probably...
Can I make a confession, Drew?
Yeah.
I have to make a confession.
Somebody did it for you?
No, I was struggling and I Googled it and someone put it on the internet. And it's the first time I've done that. I've done 3 or 4 Wordles, but today I cheated.
You cheated at Wordle is what you're saying.
Yes. Hey, at least I'm being honest about cheating.
I mean, yeah, I guess that is good. And I mean, just the idea of cheating in the first place, you know, you could have just guessed, you know, randomly.
You got me fired up. You were beaking me on Twitter. So I was working at home today. So obviously, you know, I was taking a 15-minute break. Peter Woods of Hockey Manitoba has to know that. My boss.
I'm with Tracy.
I was stuck. I got the O. I got the O and I got the T. And I had already used, I was hoping it would be donut, but I think I'd already used the U, and I got stuck. So I Googled it and somebody posted the Wordle of the day. So there, cat's out of the bag. I cheated at Wordle.
That's our Ezzy, ladies and gentlemen. That is our Ezzy. You have another opportunity starting at midnight, Ezzy. So an hour and 45 minutes from now, you have an opportunity to get back at it.
Yeah, Joe, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, right?
That's true. That's good. I'm pretty sure that's what Newt Rockne said back in the day. Or was that Bobby the Brain Heenan? It's one or the other. I'm not sure which.
Newt Rockne? You mean Newt Gingrich?
No, I mean Newt Rockne, the football coach.
Oh, I don't know who that is. God. Never heard that name.
I'll tell you what.
Is that Google NFL or college?
College. He was the coach at Notre Dame back in the day. Google him while you're Googling the word.
Did he coach Rudy?
I think he might have been the coach during Rudy. I'm not 100% sure, but in any event, you can check it out if you want.
Maybe the Jets, he plays Wordle.
Take control of the show, for God's sakes.
Pierre-Luc Dubois got the Jets on the board at the 6:41 mark of the second period. His 17th of the year assist to Kyle Connor and Josh Morrissey comes on a 5-on-3. As he mentioned earlier, the Predators decided to take a parade of high sticking penalties, taking 3 of them in the span of 4 minutes and 23 seconds in the second period. You know, and the Jets came close to making it even a 3-2 game, but they weren't able to do it. And then that fourth goal by Luke Kunin, and you know, Scheifele gets the goal early in the third. He gets it at the 25-second mark, but everything else was to the outside a lot for the rest of that period. I know the Jets racked up a lot of points, but everything was to the outside. Everything was I thought that Saros could see everything for the most part. So it just wasn't enough. It was too little and it was way too late for the Winnipeg Jets at that point in time. But you know, I guess the good news would be the penalty kill was still terrific for the Jets in tonight's game.
Andrew Kopp had a glorious chance, just a beautiful back and forth, Dave, between Kopp and Connor there in the second period. And I agree with you, Drew, like the second period was, it was fairly even. I thought the Jets were good. It wasn't as dominant as the third period. I mean, look, you could really say the Jets played 2 really good periods in this game, which we obviously know is not going to be good enough against a good team like Nashville. But you go back to that second period, guys, Nate Schmidt had a couple good opportunities, grade A opportunities, I would say. Cole Perfetti, I thought he was pretty strong tonight. I mean, Dave Lowry obviously had the line blender out there and you started to see some movement. Maybe we'll get into that later. Maybe we'll talk about it on the Saturday morning show. And then the third period.
We'll talk about it after the break.
Sure. And when you go into the third period, I mean, yeah, sure. You could say that maybe, you know, they didn't have as many high danger chances, you know, that you would want when you have 15 shots on net and you're chasing the game and you're down two goals. But remember Neil Pionk, and this was something I thought Josh Morrissey was doing a really good job of this. I mean, that's what Morrissey and Pionk specifically do. Not that other guys on the team like Nate Schmidt don't do as well, but I mean, you're trying to get the puck through. I mean, it's a cliche. You're trying to get it through the lane and hope for a tip and everything like that. Pionk had a really good chance. Adam Lowry is in front of the net. I think it was Matt Benning that got away with a little hook there. I know Dennis was kind of calling for a penalty there. So, I mean, they had chances, guys. Like, look at this wasn't a game where the Jets weren't generating enough offense. I don't think that's what it was. I mean, they gave up three goals in the first period. One of them was of the weaker variety. That's kind of what it is. I mean, sometimes it doesn't have to be any more, you know, complex than that. I mean, this was just a game in which they were chasing the game too long. And yeah, you're going to force things a little bit, but you know, were you missing Nikolaj Ehlers in this game? Of course you were. You're going to be
missing him for a while.
Well, and you're going to be missing him in any game, right? Like you'd rather have him. It's the same thing you said, Drew, about Boston. Boston's got a good team. You take Brad Marchand out, and I think there is a parallel there with Ehlers. I mean, you could argue, you know, is Marchand the best player on the team, or is it Pastrnak, or is it Bergeron?
Different players, of course, but
you're talking about top players. I think, you know, you're talking about top three offensive players on their team, right? Sure. Like you'd probably go, you know, Dubois, Connor, Ehlers, Scheifele, top four, right? So, you know, they're going to catch a break there in Boston. But you look at it, guys, 1 point out of 4 points in the last two games, you've got a tough back-to-back coming. Pittsburgh is playing so well right now. Mm-hmm. They won again. So, I mean, it's not going to be easy. But, I mean, you're looking probably for at least 3 or 4 points here to really make this a successful four-game road trip.
Penguins, as you mentioned, as the 8-2 in their last 10. So they are playing some great hockey. And you mentioned Mark Scheifele. And Dave, Mark Scheifele in the third period, I thought, was terrific. You know, he got the goal, obviously. And what happened was, you mentioned the line blender. And, you know, Vesalainen moved up and Stastny moved down. My question to you, though, is, you know, how is it that Mark Scheifele is only impactful and only really noticeable in the third period of tonight's game? Where is that energy? Where is that control of the game in the first two periods when it's still a close contest? To me, that's just the definition of, it's nice. It looks good on the stat sheet, but to play your first 40 minutes relatively invisible and come out like that on the last 20 tells me something's not right there.
Yeah, and it goes back to the oldest cliche in the book, which is, you know, hockey's a 60-minute game. You can't, or 65 minutes, but at least if you get to 65 minutes, you've got at least a point for your team, you know. But this is, it's not acceptable.
If you get to 60 minutes in 1 second, you have a point for your team.
Well, if you get it to 65 minutes, you also have a point for your team because you get a shootout. Yeah. So my point still stands. The reality is that...
I got to take a drink. I interrupted you. I got to take
exactly.
A
drink. Exactly. I think what we've seen is what we've seen too often this season with Mark Scheifele and a number of other players. But when you want to be the best player on the team and recognized as a quote upper echelon player, then all the majority of the attention is going to be focused on you. And the fixation is going to be with your gameplay because you're the driver. You want to be the top line center. You want to be mentioned in the same breath of Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews. You want to be on Team Canada. Well, then you have to do things that earn you that right. And that means not just playing for one period where people say, well, he played well in the third. Well, what was happening in that first and the second? And what I would argue is that not enough. And unfortunately, I mean, look, Mark Scheifele has 10 goals this season. You know, Mark Scheifele has less points, I think, or has the same amount. I think maybe he's got one more point than Andrew Kopp. They're right around, 24, 25 points in that range. So, I mean, he's not having a good season by his standard and the standard you've come to expect from Mark Scheifele. And I just think, like, you know, this team, it just goes back to what we've talked about when they acquired Pierre-Luc Dubois. And Pierre-Luc Dubois is holding up his end of the bargain. I mean, he's got 17 goals in 35 games. I mean, if anybody said told you that Pierre-Luc Dubois coming into the season was going to have 17 goals in 35 games, you wouldn't even question where the Jets are, because you'd think Scheifele would be in the 20 goal range. You think Kyle Connor would be in the 20 goal range. Kyle Connor is in the 20 goal range, 21 specifically. So he's holding up his end of the bar.
He's almost got, Dave, as many goals on the power play as he did all year last year.
Yeah.
Right. What is he up to? 7 now, 8 on the power play.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's got 8 on the power play, and he had 8 for the Jets last season. So he is actually tied with what he has 8. He had more than that because obviously he scored, I think, with Columbus, but he had 8 goals with the Jets. So the reality is, like, getting back to my point is, it's that idea of center depth. And it's not just Mark Scheifele, though. I mean, it's also Adam Lowry. I mean, like, Adam Lowry.
Here's a comment from Scott right now on the screen.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I mean, like, it's like I said, if Adam Lowry is your fourth line center and isn't going to produce points, then that's fine. And to be honest with you, like, he needs to be steamrolling guys. He needs to be hitting. He needs to be physical. And the first two periods, I didn't see enough of that. And that to me, I'm not going to put the whole blame of this game on Adam Lowry, but I just think that you're not seeing enough from him. And look, again, like I said, you don't try and draw too many conclusions from one game, but we're into game 35 now. And we're seeing some worrying trends with this Jets team. And part of it is not that lack of full effort. So look, you know, this season, this stretch, Washington, Nashville, Boston, Pittsburgh, those are 4 really good teams, 4 playoff teams. Mm-hmm. You want to be a playoff team.
It's like in the World Cup when they call it the group of death.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you've got to be better. And so, like I said, wrapping up my point, now we're going to go to break. The center depth on this team has to produce. Mark Scheifele has to produce. Pierre-Luc Dubois is producing. Adam Lowry has to produce. And lastly, whomever the fourth line center is, and we can talk about the fourth line minutes today, because Jansen Harkins played, what, 7? Evgeny Svechnikov played 3.
And he was good.
I actually liked Harkins' game. I agree with you, Ezzy. I liked what I was seeing in a limited sample.
I like him better on the third line, but
I like him in the third. No, I absolutely. I think he's fine on that third line. But I'm just saying that you need to have center depth producing. And we're not seeing it. And as a result, the goaltender has to be better. The players have to be better. So there's a lot of improvement that needs to happen. Just have another practice tomorrow in Boston. I'll work on that because it's their last practice for a few days.
Dave M., the voice of reason here on the Illegal Curve post-game show. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll have more on tonight's game between the Jets and the, well, I was going to say Washington Capitals. That's not right. The Nashville Predators. The Oilers are melting down in Edmonton. We'll touch on that. Ezzy will give out a toque from our friends at Tough Duck.
It's okay. And Evander Kane's coming. He's gonna save everybody.
There you go. And maybe, just maybe, Dave M will have a Manuk Moose minute. Stay with us. Lots more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve post-game show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the biggest acts and all the up-and-comers. They've all made their mark at Rumors Comedy Club, North America's longest-running independent comedy club. Rumors has kept Winnipeg laughing for over 25 years. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party, even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
He winds up. Oh, looks like Ezzy took that one right in the choppers.
A blistering fast puck hurts like HE double hockey sticks. That's why I let the pros at Linden Market Dental Center turn my yow into
wow.
Get your brilliant smile back with state-of-the-art restorative and cosmetic dentistry from real pros.
And remember, always wear a mouth guard.
Now that's solid on ice advice. Learn more at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Creating smiles for life.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos.
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rollies and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Hey boys, finding parking on game day shouldn't take longer than the Manuk minute.
It shouldn't take longer than 1 minute?
Yeah, less than a minute? I spend at least 20 driving around to find street parking, or if I'm in a rush to the game, I'll shovel out 20 at a parkade.
You're both doing it wrong. There's this app called Grid Park. It lets you find and pre-book your parking spot on game days, and you can reserve your spot up to 1 month in advance. And guess how much you'll pay?
Tell me, Dave. You know I love a deal.
Ezzy, $5.
Come on, $5?
Yeah, and it's just 2 blocks from the arena.
The Grid Park app?
Yep. Spelled G-R-Y-D Park. And you know what else?
There's more?
Our listeners get their first park free with the code FIRSTPARK.
Wow, so they just download the Grid Park app and pre-book their next game day spot for free?
Yeah, you got it, Ez. Promo code FIRSTPARK. Only on the Grid Park app.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
It's watching the game with friends, pizza night with the family, or date night for two. This holiday season, give the gift of special occasions. Get a free $10 promo card when you buy a $50 gift card from Boston Pizza. Because nobody re-gifts pizza.
For three generations and over 80 years, Tough Duck has been making apparel that works and plays as hard as the people who wear it. From jackets to work boots and everything in between, Tough Duck's clothing can handle the harshest environments, even the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Work to live, live to play. Visit toughduck.com. Bottom of the hour, 10:30 in the evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Thursday evening. I just want to run down what's a very busy weekend in store for us here at Illegal Curve. Saturday morning, 9 a.m. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, where we're going to be previewing that afternoon's Jets-Bruins game. And, of course, 1 year on Sunday to the day of the Line 8 Dubois trade. When the trade went down on that Saturday morning, we were interviewing Sarah Orleski of TSN. Sarah is going to join us on this Saturday's show. It's all about the symmetry of the 1 year later as we look back at the Dubois Line 8 trade, and I guess Roslovic was included there as well.
So we might have to slip in a Zach Caleros question as well, Drew.
Well, Zach Caleros re-signing with the Bombers, Adam Big Hill re-signing with the Bombers today, so we'll talk about that. Sarah's going to join us on Saturday.
I didn't see Big Hill. That's awesome.
Big Hill earlier this morning, yeah. Sort of bookended the day. Big Hill to start the day, Caleros to end the day from the Bombers' perspective. So 9 a.m. Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show back here on our YouTube channel. Later that afternoon, right around the say 4:45 p.m. after the Jets and the Bruins. It'll be the post-game show back here on our YouTube channel. And then again Sunday, right around, let's say, 2:45 p.m. in the afternoon after the Jets and the Penguins. It's going to be another edition of the Illegal Curve post-game show. So you certainly will get your fill of us this Saturday and Sunday. And then Sunday evening, right around 6 o'clock, we're going to start looking for three separate one-bedroom apartments after our wives and girlfriends kick us out of the house. So real exciting weekend in store for us. Really looking forward to that. Should be fun for everybody.
Boys, we're going to really have to step up this year for Valentine's Day because
we'll be at the rink at watching the Jets play the Chicago Blackhawks. So yeah,
I was going to get to that. The amount of games that we have coming tough. Up. We're going to be single.
Yeah, it's basically what we're
and Drew, by the way, don't forget, you also forgot to in your little soliloquy there to mention that there are also two Manitoba Moose games this weekend, both at 2 o'clock.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, it's going to be a very busy weekend. Keep it locked here to our YouTube channel.
Rusty Winnipeg knows what he's talking about. Call Rollies Transfer.
Yeah, exactly. Call Rollies will help us out moving into our one bedroom apartments. It'll be lovely. You know, I keep picturing when Milhouse's parents get divorced on The Simpsons.
What's the song? The book?
Can I borrow a feeling?
Can I borrow a feeling? Right, by Kirk Van Houten. And I think that's going to be the three of us. Can I borrow a feeling? Can I borrow a mattress? Might be more like it in any event. But keep it locked to illegalcurve.com. for all the latest on the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose in what will be a very busy weekend. Dave M., that leads seamlessly into you giving us a Manuk Moose Minute on this post-game show.
Well, it was going to be a perfect Manuk Moose Minute because the Moose looked poised to have a perfect road trip as they concluded things in Iowa. They got a couple guys back, including Jets 2017 third-rounder Johnny Kovacevic, who was returning from COVID protocol.
Last night, to be clear, right?
Yeah, last night. They played six games on the road, and they were 4-0-1-0 going into last night's game, looking good through 40 minutes. They had a 3-1 lead. So you're thinking to yourself, all right, well, they'll lock it down and things shouldn't be problematic for them to take at least a point home. And then the Iowa Wild decided to spoil the party. The Moose had a lot of penalty trouble yesterday. They were a little undisciplined, so a little bit of a parade to the penalty box, and Iowa made them pay. Scored, made it 3-2, 3-all. And so you're thinking, okay, well, it's going to be extra time. You know, the least, like I said, you salvaged at least a point, even though you kind of bungled a point. That'd be an example of a point loss as opposed to a point gained. But they didn't get anything because with 31 seconds to go, Mason Shaw, with his first AHL hat trick, completed the Iowa comeback and gave the division rivals a 4-3 regulation win. So a rare defeat in regulation for the Manitoba Moose. They finished the road trip 4-1, 1-0. Impressive nonetheless, though, given the fact that they were missing, like I think I've been doing it throughout the course of the road trip, they were probably missing a total of about 15 regulars out of their lineup. Their top six completely gone. They had four of their defensemen, but obviously Heinola and Sandberg are with the Jets right now. And they just got back Kovacevic, and they have Chisholm and Gavanke, but Gavanke didn't start the road trip with them. Chisholm was with the Jets, obviously making his NHL debut. So it was actually 2019 second rounder Simon Lundmark, who's, you know, making his first season over here in North America, obviously played pro in Sweden. He actually kind of got the lion's share of work. He became the big man on campus, and he actually had two assists in last night's game. So, all in all, a good road trip for the Moose. They're still chasing Chicago. They're 8 points behind the Wolves right now, who are sitting in first place. I think Grand Rapids has narrowed the gap a little bit because the Moose had quite a significant gap on third place. But it's still pretty much a neck and neck somewhat race for that first spot. So it'll be a great series because Chicago happens to be the first team. The Moose are playing six games straight here in Winnipeg. And as I said on the website, illegalcurve.com, the first four games are going to have 250 fans. We don't know about the next six after the two after that. But so fans will be back in the building somewhat, of course. And like I've said on the website, the Moose fans, especially because they generally tend to skew a little younger, are a little bit louder because they're cheering regardless of what's happening. There's a fight. They're screaming for blood. It's the best. So anyways, we'll see what happens. But yeah, it should set itself up to be a really good weekend contest. We'll see who they get back from the Jets because the Jets obviously are expected to get back Brendan Dillon and Eric Comrie. So we'll see what happens in that regard for the Moose and how it
Blake Wheeler too there.
Blake Wheeler as well. So yeah. So there are some, and you know, the truth is, you know, what they're going to have to do from a salary perspective, of course, because once Blake Wheeler comes back, you have to figure out the cap ramifications for the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, if the Ehlers news is bad, you can put him on LTIR, and then you can figure, you don't want to, obviously, you don't have to. And Mike McIntyre of the Free Press said he saw him walking in Nashville without any sort of boot or anything like that, just a slight limp. Doesn't mean
I was going to say, Dave, it doesn't seem like LTIR is an option for either, but we don't know.
I would wait. Like he got evaluated yesterday. Anyways, the long story short is the Moose could get back some reinforcements for this weekend series against the Chicago Wolves, which should be an interesting one. It's going to be a little hectic for me, of course, because the
overlap. No one cares about you.
Oh, everybody cares. Everybody who's listening to this Manuk Moose Minute right now, they care, including and especially Manuk's analyst.
I care. Mindell might not care, Dave.
So all I'm saying is that the 2 o'clock start time because what time does the Boston game start?
The Boston game is at 2 also.
Yeah. So they got a 2 o'clock. So those ones. And then the Sunday one is brutal because that's a 12 o'clock Jets game start. The Moose game starts at 2. So I may be doing the post game. I might have to steal one of the boxes inside Bell MTS or Canada Life because just to get some quiet.
It's not important. I just someday somebody in the NHL needs to explain to me why they are going up against the NFL in two American cities. Like, you know, Boston on Monday or on Saturday, where theoretically the Patriots could be playing in a playoff game that afternoon at home. And yet the Bruins have the same game that would, you know, overlap somewhat time-wise potentially. And Pittsburgh the next day could be playing a home playoff game at the same time, theoretically. I just don't understand why the NHL would schedule those games at that time in American cities when the NFL playoffs are going on. I mean, just don't schedule against the NFL playoffs.
But they don't. I mean, I know what you're saying, but these games were already scheduled. They didn't know the playoff games were going to be happening.
No, the playoff games aren't happening in those cities. They knew when the playoff games were going to be. I just don't understand why they schedule anything on Sunday afternoon.
No, but I'm saying they didn't know what teams in the NFL would be involved in those playoffs.
I know, but I'm saying in general, they just shouldn't schedule against the NFL playoffs is my point.
You're saying they should just be at night games is what you're saying.
Or I'm just saying figure out a way, Don't have afternoon games against, you know, head-to-head against the NFL playoffs as much as you can avoid it. But, you know, the NHL claims to know better than I do.
That's why you got picture-in-picture, Drew.
Is that still a thing? I don't even know if that's still a thing.
Pip's still a thing.
Okay. What I was going to say, you mentioned Nikolai Ehlers. Darren Dreger reported earlier tonight that it's an MCL sprain for Nikolai Ehlers, and he's week to week. So now, will that eventually warrant? Is that, you know, week to week being 1-2, or is that week to week 4-6?
We didn't say that. I was trying to watch that riveting coverage during the intermission, but
he just tweeted it 3 hours ago. It's his second most recent tweet on his Twitter account. So if it's, you know, if it's a 1-2 week thing, obviously the Jets won't put Ehlers on LTIR. If it's a 4-6 week thing, then maybe they will put him on LTIR.
What's the minimum you have to be out of the lineup?
10 games.
10 games or 24 days.
Yeah, 10 games or 24 days.
Sorry, 10 games and 24 days. Yeah. It's got to be you can't.
You don't have to fulfill both of them.
No.
Just one. Yeah. 10 or 24. Yeah. Okay. I thought you were saying 10 and 24.
But I mean, it's basically the same thing, right? Because
it normally is generally, except for this Wheeler time.
And interestingly, Blake Wheeler's, even though he only missed as of right now, seven games, the games that were rescheduled still qualify. Obviously, that's the reason why he's able to do it. Otherwise, he wouldn't technically be. He'd been 24 days.
I think basically what you guys are saying is that Jets management's going to have their calculator out.
They might have to have an abacus. They might have to have all sorts of, get some extra fingers and toes if they need to really do some difficult math. Time will tell in that case. Ezzy, before we do the tough duck hardest hitting comment, a look at the out of town scoreboard tonight. The Oilers came out like a house on fire. They outshot the Florida Panthers 17-7 in the first period. They could not get anything past Sergei Bobrovsky, who earned his $10 million plus.
Hold on, Drew. Say it properly. Say it like Jay Onright says it.
Bobrovsky.
There you go.
That was a pretty lame attempt, but anyways. They couldn't get anything past Bobrovsky, and then the second period began, and the Oilers melted down. They end up losing 6-0 on home ice to Florida Panthers. It's just that's a fragile team right there. They played a great first period. They couldn't get that goal, and then the Panthers scored first early in the early in the second period. Barkov scored a power play goal, and then Carter Verhaeghe scored a couple minutes later, and then the floodgates opened up in the third period. The Oilers giving up 4 goals in the third period. 6-0.
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm pretty sure Florida scored like 30 goals in their last 5 games, right? Because they had the back-to-back 9 goals.
Before the Calgary game. Calgary did a good number against them, and then Florida's obviously found their skating legs again in this game against the Oilers tonight in the second and the third period. And the Oilers, I'm sure it'll be an entertaining hopefully they won't be too pissy in the post-game show comments, but in any event, not important to delve into that one. Ezzy, the hardest-hitting comment in tonight's post-game show, who's it going to be?
We got to give it to Mal Paris. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not his real name, but Mal Paris has been a loyal. You got it up there, Drew. That was a while back at the beginning of the post-game show, but Mal Paris has been a loyal viewer and listener of the Illegal Curve postgame show and the Saturday show. So you got the comment up there. I think Maul was talking about 91 with Kopp and Shifley there. With
yeah, I'm not sure if he was talking about 91 or 93. 93 is my guess, is actually, because Perfetti has looked so good with Dubois and Connor that I think he means Veselainen to slide up with Shifley and Kopp, and Wheeler to move eventually when he returns with Lowry and Stastny. But maybe Maul can clarify that in any subsequent comment.
Wasn't former Manitoba Moose, this is going way back to the International Hockey League days, but wasn't Alexander Korolyuk 94? Am I getting that right? Can anybody save me here? I'm pretty sure he wore 94. Didn't Sergei Berezin, former Toronto Maple Leaf, also wear 94? Anyways, it's long. I could be getting those both right, but 94 is not a common number. But we're going to give Maul Paris the Tough Duck toque, courtesy of Tough Duck. So send me an email, ezra@illegalcurve.com, or hit me up on Twitter with a DM, Maul Paris, and they will ship you out a Tough Duck toque, which you're going to need because it's going to be cold for quite some time now.
I'm a little disappointed that when you were talking about number 94, you went to Sergei Berezin and Alexander Korolyuk and skipped over the greatest player to wear number 94, a guy that's near and dear to your heart.
It's not coming to me, devil.
Man. No, not a devil. But before you had kids and before you had a wife, you would have known this answer like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely slipping a little bit. I can't think of any other 94s right now. Well, Ryan Smith.
There you go. Ryan Smith.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. So congratulations to Maul Paris.
Captain Canada. How did I forget about him?
That's what I'm saying. How did you forget about Captain Canada? That's not like Smitty. You, Mr. Ginsburg.
Yeah.
You're getting a little rusty. You need to get some beauty sleep. Stop staying up so late.
I'm more than a little rusty.
Trying to cheat on Wordle instead. Get some beauty sleep. In any event, congratulations to Maul Paris celebrating by declaring himself the troll on the Twitter, on the comment right now.
I think Maul Paris doesn't want to reveal his secret identity because he's now saying, donate the toque to Winnipeg Harvest for me. Interesting.
Interesting.
I think Maul Paris is...
You know what?
He's
Superman. I'm going to do one better. We'll give you a toque and we will also... Winnipeg Harvest is a great cause, so I like that. So we're going to give you one and I'll make sure that Winnipeg Harvest gets one as well.
Oh,
as and you can even set
maybe
up,
we'll get them a few toques.
Maybe we'll set up a dummy P.O. box so Maul Paris can just have it delivered to that and you won't have to worry about a secret identity. Of course, we'll be sitting there, you know, staking it out. It'll be like another stakeout.
I really like that, though, because this time of year with this type of weather, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that are less fortunate. So I really enjoy that. But you're going to get one and we will hook that up with Winnipeg Harvest.
There you go. So Maul Paris, send Ezzy an email with your name and your mailing address, ezra@illegalcurve.com, or also you can send it to him on Twitter @ICEzzyG.
Or just come to my house in River Heights if you can figure out where I live.
That you could do that too. Or if you have a one bedroom apartment, maybe you can sublet it to Ezzy. Right.
Yeah, exactly. That for now, but after February is over, I'm going to be living in an apartment in River Heights, not a house.
There you go. In any event, so big thank you to our friends at Tough Duck for their support of the Illegal Curve post game show. And of course, for being the sponsor of the hardest hitting comment. Also want to give a thank you to our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and the Illegal Curve Post Game Show. Now Maul Paris says he wants to meet you at the Grove for a pint. It's closed right now, Maul, because of...
Someone drove a car into it.
Somebody drove a car into it.
I love how Drew's calling it. It's closed right now, Maul. Like, using his first name as if it's a real first name.
Well, I absolutely.
When the Grove reopens, I think the canteen is open, though.
The canteen is open. That's right. Not around
the River Heights canteen, which I used to work at.
And until what happened? River Heights
Community Center.
Until what happened?
I was fired. I was 16 years old, so that's 23 years ago.
Yeah.
I was fired because I went to Kelvin High School. And the Kelvin...
wasn't why you were fired.
Well, no, but I was getting there. I used to work, that's for some reason, I guess, I always used to work the Kelvin Clipper games. And I knew everybody on the team and I knew everybody that went to, so it was a little bit of a party in the canteen there, but I used to let people come back, you know, help themselves to some chips, some candies. Personally, I used to
like... Basically a complete failure at your job.
I got fired because I was getting a little indulgent with the candy. That's
as Frosty Winnipeg just said, things went missing.
Things went missing is right. Things went missing. Yeah. That's it for us on this edition of the Illegal.
Wait, are we going to talk about Jesse Pollock's bar down eating contest with
Saturday?
And happy belated birthday. It was his birthday yesterday.
It was my third cousin. Your third cousin. We'll talk about it on Saturday, guys.
People were enjoying it. I can tell you. I put it on the website, and a lot of people were loving it.
Oh yeah,
it,
so. People are talking.
It's true. In any event, we will talk about that on Saturday. We'll talk about the Jets roster on Saturday as Blake Wheeler certainly seems imminent to return. We'll talk about all sorts of things related to the Winnipeg Jets come Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. They drop a 5-2 decision tonight to the Nashville Predators, a missed opportunity. Big thanks to everybody for joining us. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button on your way out. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to our podcast. Leave us comments everywhere in which you can get this fine program. We always love to hear from you. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good luck. Good night and good luck.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.